I want you to imagine just for a second the overwhelming physical sensation of standing right in the middle of a Colombian swamp.
Oh, yes, specifically the Cienaga Grande. It is intense.
Right. Just picture this massive brackish expanse of water, you know, right where the rivers meet the sea. You are dealing with this thick, sweltering heat.
The kind of oppressive humidity that just feels heavy in your lungs.
Exactly. You're constantly sweating. Every single day requires this literal physical exertion just to survive the
Because your
environment.
home is perched on these wooden stilts,
Right.
like just inches above the mud and the rising tides.
Yeah, life there is incredibly raw. The margin for error is razor thin, which honestly brings us to the massive paradox we are unpacking today.
That's a huge paradox, yeah.
Because the scene we are going to talk about, this really visceral window into the daily grind of the swamp, it was not captured by a painter standing waist-deep in that muddy water.
No, fighting off insects in the heat. Not at all.
Right. The artist who painted it was sitting thousands of miles away.
In California, actually.
Yeah, in a quiet, sterile, climate-controlled studio in Whittier, California, just staring at a digital screen.
Which is just wild to think about.
It is. And to add a completely different layer of distance to it all, the final artwork eventually traveled across the world to be exhibited in a high-end gallery in Athens, Greece.
That trajectory creates a phenomenal contradiction. I mean, when you really look at it,
Oh,
you
absolutely.
have this extreme reality of a precarious physical existence, right? And it's being filtered through glowing digital pixels in California.
Yeah, and then rematerialized for an entirely different audience across oceans in Europe.
Exactly. And that journey forms the core mission for our deep dive today. We are going to explore how a digital translation of the absolute most mundane, everyday chore imaginable,
Doing the laundry.
right, doing the laundry, how that can somehow reveal profound hidden truths about human survival, dignity, and, deeply entrenched structural inequality.
Because on the surface, laundry is just a chore. We all do it.
Right, it's just laundry. But when you dissect the mechanics behind it in an environment like the Cienaga Grande, it becomes this loaded, monumental act of defiance.
And the sources we have today give us a completely unprecedented view into that specific act. We are looking at a modest 15 by 11 inch watercolor painting.
By the artist Jairo Duque.
Yes, titled Tendidos, which translates to clotheslines. But the real treasure here is that we don't just have the painting.
We have his notes.
Yeah, we have his personal logbook. Specifically, it's a critical essay cataloged under the section Trastio Pintura Artistica.
And having both pieces is just, it's a rare privilege.
It really is.
We get to analyze the polished visual piece that hangs in a gallery alongside the raw intellectual machinery the artist used to construct it, you know?
Yeah, we have his direct, unedited voice actively critiquing his own brushstrokes.
His own thought process.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the idea that a modest 15 by 11 piece of paper could bridge the massive gap between the digital isolation of California and the raw survival of a Colombian community is fascinating.
It takes a lot of translation.
Right, but to understand that bridge, we have to visualize what is actually on the paper. For you listening, let me paint the picture.
It's deceptively simple.
Very simple. The entire surface of the watercolor is dominated by these vast, incredibly serene blue tones. Right in the center, there are two rustic wooden stilt houses.
The Palafitos.
The Palafitos, yeah. They are suspended over the water on these unbelievably thin, fragile-looking pilings. They almost look like toothpicks, honestly.
Like they could just snap at any moment.
Exactly. And below them, you see a peaceful, glass-like reflection in the water. But what breaks up all this immense, quiet blue space are these tiny, vibrant bursts of color hanging on the railings.
Little pops of red, yellow, and white.
Right. The clothes hanging out to dry in the sun, the clothesline. And reading through the artist's logbook, it made me think about how we perceive domestic chores, and I couldn't help but draw an analogy here.
Oh, I like analogies. Let's hear it.
A clothesline is essentially the universal screensaver of human life.
Oh, the screensaver analogy works perfectly here, especially when you consider how our brains process repetitive background info.
Exactly. Think about how a screensaver functions on a computer. It is a repetitive, looping background animation that plays while our system goes into standby.
Right, we just tune it out.
We tune it out because it is just background processing. We see the looping colors, but we completely ignore the massive amount of computational energy happening behind the scenes.
The energy keeping that animation running, yeah.
But clotheslines exist in basically every culture on Earth, right? We just walk right past them without giving a single thought to the intense physical labor and the sheer caloric output that put those clothes on the wire.
And that psychological tendency to tune out the labor, that perfectly captures the trap of the tourist's gaze.
Which Duke explicitly challenges in his essay.
Right, because when a tourist visits a place like the Cienaga Grande, their brain does exactly what you just described with the screensaver.
They just glaze over the effort.
Yeah, they look at a clothesline strung between two incredibly fragile wooden houses, and they ignore the brutal, back-breaking reality of life there.
Instead, the brain just flattens the landscape into a postcard.
Exactly. The clothesline becomes this, you know, this picturesque detail.
It gets reduced to local flavor.
It turns into an exotic, rustic little pop of color for their vacation photograph. And when you treat precariousness as something picturesque, you are actively romanticizing someone else's daily struggle for survival.
You are consuming their poverty as an aesthetic.
Which is dangerous. But what the logbook reveals is that Duke deliberately avoids painting an epic natural disaster to combat this.
Oh, right. There's no dramatic hurricane destroying the Palafitos.
No weeping faces in a storm. None of that.
He strips all the dramatic noise away to force the viewer to look at the clothesline as what he calls suspended time serving the primordial.
That phrase, suspended time serving the primordial, it really anchors the whole piece.
It does. Because when you hang laundry, you are literally just waiting on the sun and the wind. You are at the total mercy of the primordial elements.
You're just waiting.
But, you know, if the artist's entire goal is to highlight this intense human effort, there is a massive contradiction staring us in the face.
What's that?
There isn't a single human being painted anywhere in this picture. The houses are completely deserted.
Well, that absence is arguably the loudest component of the painting. It functions as a forensic reading of the scene.
A forensic reading?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The artist is utilizing the clothes as direct substitutes for human bodies.
I mean, I have to push back on the idea of a forensic reading, though. When you look at an empty shirt hanging on a wire, it is ultimately just a piece of wet cotton.
Sure.
So how does an empty shirt tell us anything meaningful about, like, structural inequality?
Because an empty shirt in this specific environment is a piece of hard evidence.
Okay.
Forensically, if you look at that clothesline and spot a tiny t-shirt, you instantly know there are children living in that fragile structure over the swamp.
Oh, I see.
And if you look at the sheer volume of clothes strung up, you can calculate the demographic size of the family. The laundry is leaving a distinct biological and social footprint.
Wow. Okay, so you are reading the census data of the house through their domestic chores.
Exactly. But the forensics go much deeper into the structural inequality. The very fact that the clothesline is there exposes an absolute lack of modern infrastructure.
Because there are no washing machines inside those Palafitos.
Right. There are no electric dryers.
Yeah.
No dedicated laundry rooms with municipal plumbing. Every single piece of clothing hanging on that railing had to be washed by hand.
Think about the mechanics of that.
It's grueling.
You cannot wash clothes in the brackish, muddy water of the swamp.
No, it would ruin them.
Right. Someone had to haul fresh water in, agitate those clothes by hand, physically wring out the heavy, wet cotton, and hang them up.
Their entire existence is dictated by the climate, completely devoid of the technological safety nets that most people take for granted.
That changes the entire perspective of the painting. It takes this hyper-local, very specific Colombian stilt house and transforms it into a universal symbol of resilience.
It really does.
Because you could be standing in a marginalized periphery anywhere in the world, you know, a slum in Mumbai, a favela in Rio.
Right, any of those places.
And if you see that exact same clothesline, you instantly recognize the exact same lack of infrastructure.
It is a globally understood visual language.
Yeah.
It's about making do with what you have and fighting against your environment just to maintain a baseline of normalcy.
And that fight brings up a really interesting tension regarding the aesthetic of the painting. We mentioned those bursts of red and yellow clothes against the blue water.
Yeah, the colors.
The colors are undeniably beautiful, but doesn't painting poverty with such vibrant, beautiful colors run the risk of doing exactly what the tourist's gaze does?
Like romanticizing it?
Yeah, doesn't it beautify the structure?
Well, the logbook shows that the artist draws a very strict ethical line right there. He is hyper aware of the danger of beautifying poverty, which is a very toxic narrative.
Right.
The vibrant colors are not utilized to make the poverty look acceptable or pretty. They represent a fierce, active human effort to maintain dignity.
Oh, I love that.
I mean, consider what it actually takes to keep a white shirt bright and clean when your entire home is literally built over a muddy swamp.
It's nearly impossible.
Those bright colors are an act of defiance against the environment.
Right.
They show an individual rhythm and an absolute refusal to be swallowed by the dirt and precariousness surrounding them.
It is a constant daily battle against the water. And, you know, knowing that these communities are entirely dependent on the physical properties of water.
For everything.
Right. For their homes to stand, for their transportation, for their washing. It's brilliant that the artist's chosen medium is watercolor.
The medium itself is completely reliant on water, making it a perfect conceptual marriage between the subject matter and the technique.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the logbook dives deep into this. Duke is obsessive about his technical choices.
Very meticulous.
He specifically highlights using Arches 300-gram cold-pressed paper and Daniel Smith pigments. He doesn't just casually mention the brand.
No, he wants you to know.
He gives us the exact physical and chemical makeup of his tools, which means the chemistry itself must be part of the story.
The tools are absolutely part of the narrative architecture. Take the reflection of the houses in the water, for instance.
Yeah, the reflection in the painting is almost photographic. It's a perfectly mirrored duplication of the houses on the water's surface.
And a cynical observer might view that flawless reflection and assume the artist is simply flexing his technical skills, right?
Just showing off his ability to render still water perfectly.
Exactly. But Duke's notes explain that this highly technical duplication serves a very specific conceptual purpose. That perfect reflection symbolizes the infinite, inescapable duplication of the laundry cycle.
Oh, wow. That makes perfect sense. Laundry is the one chore that is never, ever truly finished.
Never.
It is the ultimate Sisyphean task.
You wash the clothes by hand, you hang them up, you wait for the sun, you take them down, you wear them, and the cycle instantly duplicates itself.
Over and over again for a lifetime.
By painting that perfect mirrored reflection, he is illustrating forced monotony. It is not just a placid landscape. It is the visual representation of an endless, exhausting loop of labor.
And the physical logic of using that specific watercolor paper plays directly into this fragility, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. The physics of the paper are crucial to the metaphor. He deliberately chooses cold-pressed paper.
Okay, why cold-pressed?
Well, if you were to examine cold-pressed paper under a microscope, you would not see a flat, smooth surface. You would see a rugged landscape of microscopic valleys and peaks.
It has a heavy, aggressive texture to it.
Right. And because watercolor is a fluid, transparent medium, when you apply the wet pigment to that heavily textured paper, the water naturally settles and pools into those microscopic valleys.
So it's hard to control.
The material physically fights against you if you try to paint rigid, straight, mechanical lines.
You literally cannot get a razor-sharp edge on that kind of paper.
The resulting image naturally develops these slightly dissolved, trembling edges, particularly around the wooden architecture of the houses. Duke leverages that physical property of the medium as a direct metaphor for the profound structural fragility of the stilt houses themselves.
Because the homes are literally trembling above the water.
Lacking a solid, rigid foundation, yeah.
The material of the paper is doing the heavy lifting to tell the story of their precariousness.
It is fascinating that the physical material of the artwork is mimicking the structural reality of the swamp. But we have to talk about the pigments, too. Why specify Daniel Smith pigments in the logbook? This is where the chemistry becomes incredibly profound. Daniel Smith watercolors are famous in the art world for a property called granulation. Yes. Unlike standard dyes, many of their pigments are made from actual crushed heavy minerals, things like hematite, lapis lazuli, or pimontite.
Oh, actual rocks.
Exactly. When you mix these heavy mineral pigments with water and apply them to the paper, the particles are so heavy that they actually fall out of suspension. They physically precipitate and settle into the deep valleys of the paper.
So the paint itself is acting like sediment.
Exactly. The chemistry of the heavy granulating paint physically mimics the mud, the silt, and the sediment of the actual swamp.
That is just brilliant.
As the water evaporates on the paper, it leaves behind this textured, gritty mineral deposit. The artist is literally using a microscopic simulation of a swamp environment to paint the swamp.
That blows my mind. And it brings us back to the digital translation aspect of all this. We mentioned earlier that he painted this while staring at a digital screen in California.
Right.
How does that digital mechanism actually serve the artwork? Because usually we think of a screen as something that disconnects us from reality.
In this specific context, though, the digital screen acts as a necessary filter. Think about the reality of the swamp. It is a 3D, multi-sensory, chaotic environment.
You have the overwhelming heat, the smell of stagnant water,
the constant buzzing of insects, the physical discomfort. It is sensory overload.
It's too loud, both literally and metaphorically.
Well, a digital screen takes that chaotic, overwhelming environment and aggressively flattens it into a 2D plane. It strips away the heat and the bugs.
So it simplifies it.
By looking at a digital reference, the artist is able to isolate the specific visual geometry of the clothesline. The technology doesn't distance him from the humanity. It acts as a sensory deprivation tool.
Ah, that makes sense.
It allows him to focus purely on the structural reality without being overwhelmed by the hostility of the environment.
But, you know, the concept of the swamp's hostility is something Duke wrestles with deeply in his self-critique.
He really does.
Usually, once a painting goes through this level of meticulous thought, gets framed, and hits a gallery wall in Greece, it is treated as a finished, untouchable masterpiece.
Like it's set in stone.
Right. But Duke does something incredibly rare in his logbook. He tears his own choices apart. He actively critiques the finished piece hanging on the wall as if it's still a draft.
That level of vulnerability proves that for the artist, the painting is an evolving, living process. The intellectual work did not stop the moment the watercolor dried on the paper.
I do have to challenge one of his critiques, though. In the essay, Duke writes that he actually regrets making the water so still and perfect.
Yeah, he says he wishes he had distorted it.
But wait, if he distorts the water, wouldn't that completely ruin the brilliant metaphor of the infinite daily cycle we just unpacked? The perfect duplication was the whole point of the laundry chore.
This represents the tension artists face when balancing competing truths. He would absolutely lose the perfection of the infinite cycle metaphor, yes.
So why change it?
However, he argues in the logbook that he would gain something far more vital to understanding the reality of the Cienega Grande, and that is the innate hostility of the swamp.
The painting looks incredibly calm, though.
And that is the trap he feels he fell into. A perfectly still reflection makes the water seem docile. It makes the swamp look like a tranquil, decorative pond in a city park.
But a swamp is the opposite of docile.
Right. Distorting the reflection, adding ripples, breaks, and turbulence to the mirror would introduce the unpredictable, often violent nature of the environment.
We are talking about shifting tides, sudden winds,
hidden currents, and constant structural threats that these wooden houses must withstand every single minute. By making the water too pretty, he feels he accidentally sanitized the danger and lied about how hard it is to survive there.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense. He accidentally leaned back toward the tourist's gaze by making it too peaceful.
Exactly.
And he has a second major critique in his logbook that builds on this. He says he wishes he had softened the architectural contours of the houses even more. He wishes the buildings themselves were blurrier.
That desire to soften the edges ties directly into the biological reality of building in a swamp. Contrast the Palafito with traditional city architecture. When you build a rigid concrete and steel skyscraper in a city, that structure is designed to dominate nature. It imposes its geometry on the landscape and repels the elements.
Concrete doesn't compromise with the rain.
Exactly. But these wooden stilt houses exist in a state of forced assimilation with the swamp. They're constructed from organic material.
What?
Over time, that wood acts like a sponge, absorbing the heavy moisture from the water below. It swells, it grows moss. Parts of it slowly rot away, and the residents have to patch it up with whatever scrap materials they can find.
So the swamp is very slowly, persistently trying to swallow the house.
While the house continually resists and adapts.
The house is a living, rotting organism itself.
They are biologically negotiating with each other. By softening the edges of the house in the painting, making the wood physically bleed into the surrounding water and air on the paper, Duke feels he could have better represented that forced assimilation.
The house isn't just standing on the swamp, it is surviving with it. It is incredible to picture an artist standing in a prestigious European gallery, looking at his beautifully framed work and thinking, the swamp isn't eating the house enough?
It's a great image.
It highlights how art is a constant machinery of reevaluation in the creator's mind.
But despite all that self-critique and reevaluation, the core thesis of the work remains remarkably powerful.
Mm.
In his notes, Duke refers to this painting as a silent affirmation.
That phrasing, silent affirmation, it perfectly encapsulates the tone of the piece. Looking at the painting and reading the essay, you realize it completely evades the trap of loud, preachy, political pamphleteering.
There are no grand slogans painted across the sky demanding justice.
Right. And it equally avoids the patronizing poor but happy narrative.
Yes, it does not attempt to convince the viewer that these people are living some idyllic, simple life free from the stresses of modernity.
It quietly exposes a harsh structural reality using nothing but the undeniable physical evidence of a washed shirt hanging in the sun.
It trusts the viewer's intelligence to understand the implications of the labor.
It forces you to confront the inequality by simply presenting the geometry of the chore. So what does this all mean for us, for the people sitting here analyzing this digital translation of his work?
It's a good question.
To me, it brings us full circle to the irony we started with. In our daily lives, we constantly complain that the hyperconnectivity of digital screens, you know, the endless scrolling, the emails, the notifications.
It distracts us from the physical world. We view the screen as an engine of distraction.
But in the case of Jairo Duque in his Whittier studio, a digital screen acted as the ultimate clarifying filter. The vast geographic distance and the digital isolation actually allowed him to strip away the physical noise of the swamp.
And capture the pure, unadulterated rhythm of human survival. The technology isolated the signal from the noise.
It provided the exact distance required to see the structural reality without being blinded by the immediate physical hardship.
Which is pretty incredible.
It really is. Which leaves us with a final thought I want to pose directly to you, listening right now. Think about the core premise of what we just explored. An artist used a digital screen to look at a mundane clothesline. And through that simple everyday chore, he was able to forensically read the physical survival, the family demographics, and the structural inequalities of an entire community.
He read the truth of their lives through what they casually hung out in the open.
The physical laundry became an unintended historical record. So if that is true for a physical piece of cotton on a wire, what invisible digital clotheslines are you leaving behind right now?
Oh, that's a thought.
What mundane everyday digital routines, what passive data footprints are you casually hanging out in the open on your screens? And decades from now, what will future historians deduce when they analyze your invisible digital laundry to understand the hidden struggles, the anxieties, and the structural realities of our lives today?
It certainly reframes the way we think about the mundane artifacts we leave behind in our own daily cycles.
It really does. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the art of survival, observation, and the chemistry of reality. We highly encourage you to take a second look the next time you see a simple clothesline hanging in the sun. There is a whole world of resilience right there in the breeze. Take care, everyone.